Just by way of connecting this to what we studied last week when we were talking about Abraham, the first altar that Abraham built to the Lord when he was called out of Haran and Ur was in Shechem, which is in the northern part of Samaria. In fact, the first altar and temple to the Lord, Yahweh, was built in the north, not in the south in Judea, which I think is going to be interesting in terms of our text today. I want to talk to you about this woman, and I want to talk to you about the violence that actually surrounded this story before it and after it. Violence, in most cases, I think, proceeds from a sense of shame, with the perpetrators of violence lashing out at whatever or whoever they've projected their shame onto. This, in turn, leads to a spiraling of violence as those ashamed of being bullied become bullies, where the abused become the abusers, and the cycle continues or even can escalate. The cycle of shame and violence doesn't have to continue, though, because Jesus showed us a way out of it. And that's what this Sunday's gospel lesson is all about. Jesus is now traveling through northern territory in Samaria, a land populated by Samaritans, whom Judeans, the southern tribe in Jerusalem, despised. Even though they were brothers and sisters, they hated each other. It wasn't always that way, but in 586 BCE, the king of Babylon conquered Israel, destroyed the temple that had been built there, that Solomon had built, and enslaved the political and the religious leadership of both Samaria and then down in Jerusalem. The phrase, "time heals all wounds," did not apply to Israel or her remembrance of this. Like most people, the Judeans were looking for somebody to blame long after the exile had ended. There must be a reason for this. There must have been a reason why we were taken into exile. Somehow human beings have not changed all that much over the course of these thousands of years. We still look to assign blame for things that are beyond our control. Trying, in a sense, to make sense of why God would have allowed this to happen, the men of Judea found it convenient to blame the men of Samaria for their exile. The charge was interracial marriage. By marrying foreign women, according to Nehemiah and Ezra, the foreign women that they married when they were in captivity, the Samaritan men, had made God upset. At least that's what the Judeans were saying. So leaders like Ezra and Nehemiah, who were assigned to come back to Jerusalem to rebuild the city and the temple, said that what they had to do was immediately divorce all of their foreign wives, passing along this experience of humiliation, abandonment, and exile. Not too surprisingly, most of the Samaritan men refused this order, which led to this humiliating treatment by the leaders of Judea. In Nehemiah's own words, he says this, and I quote, "I contended with them and cursed them and beat some of them and pulled out their hair, and I made them take an oath in the name of God. Thus I cleansed them from everything foreign." That's Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 25 through 30. And so began this hatred between the Judeans and their Samaritan brothers and sisters that was centuries old by the time that Jesus came to Jacob's well and was approached by this woman of Samaria. It was high noon, we're told in the text, in the heat of the day. Not a time when women would be outside doing chores, not a time you'd want to be lifting a heavy clay jar, much less having to lug that heavy jar on your head all the way back to your village to give water to your family. The other women went to the well early in the morning when the work wouldn't be quite as hard and the sun wouldn't be as intense, and the drudgery of hauling water would be eased literally by the fellowship that was shared with one another around that well, passing on the gossip of the day, what had happened the day before, what they were expecting to do that day, kind of like what we do. What's your day going to be like? Are you going to watch anything on TV? That kind of thing. But this woman who does not have a name, was one of the people the other women loved to gossip about because she didn't come out with them at 9 a.m. And the fact that she showed up at noon was a sure sign that she wasn't welcome at that morning's social gathering. And yet, as oppressive as that noonday sun was, it didn't burn like the stares of those others in the village. So she goes to the well when she is sure that she'll be alone and doesn't have to face any kind of rejection from people around her that are supposed to be her tribe's people. But she isn't alone. Jesus is there, and he speaks to her, which is something men only did back in that day if they were propositioning a woman. So having been used, literally, and discarded by so many men from the village, it's a little wonder that there's an edge in this woman's response to Jesus when he asks her where her husband is. And when she replies that she has none, Jesus agrees with her, but not in the way that she's used to being talked to. Jesus says, "You're right, for you have had five husbands," which, if you were to put it into our context, would be like saying, "You are right, of all of the men that you've been with, none of them have truly loved you. Each one has divorced you because you couldn't produce offspring, because you cooked a bad meal." Whatever the reason is, men could divorce women, women could not divorce men back in that day. So there have been five husbands that have left her behind, which meant there was no social safety net for her. There was no Social Security or Medicare, so to speak, back then. It was your family that took care of you. And Jesus says, "You are right. You've had five." And the poor woman has sold her dignity so many times in search of acceptance that this has come to define love for her. This is what she thinks love looks like. So when Jesus tells her this intimacy of everything that's going on and looks into her and sees her for who she really is, she tries to change the subject to draw him back into the argument about Jews versus Samaritans, because that's a comfortable argument. Always elevate where you're uncomfortable to a level above yourselves. That way you can fight and it doesn't become as personalized. And you can hardly blame her for doing this. If Jesus knows about husbands, there is no telling what else he knows about her. And she decides she'd rather not find out. It's time to step back from him and cover herself up, so to speak, again. But this does not work this time, because when she steps back, Jesus steps closer to her. When she steps out of the light, Jesus steps into it. He will not let her retreat from him. If she's so determined to show less of herself, vulnerably wise to him, then he will show her more of who he is to alleviate her fears. She says, "I know that the Messiah is coming." And he says, "I am he." Now, this is extraordinary. This little phrase, "I am he," is uttered nowhere else in the scriptures. It's the first time in any of the gospels that Jesus has said this to another human being, and a woman to boot, a Samaritan woman to boot. In a moment of full disclosure in which this ultimate outsider and the Son of God stand face to face, both of them picture this standing there lit up by the high noon sun for one brilliant moment, while all the taboos and the rules and history that separate them over all of these millennia fall away to the ground. It's one of the only two conversations that Jesus has in the Bible, and both are with women who are outsiders. One a Samaritan and the other a Syrophoenician woman. Both actually change his perspective. By telling the woman who she is, Jesus shows her who he is. By confirming her true identity, he reveals his own to her, and that is how it still happens to this day. The Messiah is the one who knows who you really are. He knows when you're good. He knows when you're bad. He knows all of it, the hope of it, the fear of it, the wisdom of it, and the judgment in it, and the mercy finally available out of it. The Messiah is the one who shows you who you are by crossing all of the boundaries that we as human beings want to erect to keep ourselves separate from one another, by breaking through all of the social taboos, speaking to you like somebody that you've known all of your life, so that you can go back now into your own village and face people who thought you could never face, that you would never be able to face again. Suddenly she's instilled with confidence. Suddenly she's instilled with this amazing awareness that she's loved and accepted by the Son of God himself. And she says to her village, she says, "Come and see a man who told me everything I've ever done. Come and see this." What transformed this woman could transform everything in our world, frankly. The woman at the well was despised by her village, which in turn was despised by the Judeans, the southerners, whose ancestors had been humiliated by the Assyrians and the Babylonians before. From generation to generation, humiliation, resentment, and violence were passed down by people keeping score so that they could even it. And we see that still today, trying to even the score, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Jesus sets aside all of this scorekeeping. He doesn't recognize it and wants to go right over our man-made boundaries by treating people, especially the most vulnerable people in our society, like this woman, with dignity and respect. And he doing this makes reconciliation possible. It is truly good to be known, but only by those that really love and care for you. Amen.